KALW.
When Parker closed, I knew I wanted to do something. I didn't know what I was going to do.
Oakland's Parker Elementary School closed, but it's now home to something new.
I used the adult ed system, the workforce development system. I went to community college, to university. So I went through these systems.
The second life of a closed school. Then what do teenagers think about artificial intelligence?
It makes me feel a little bit like there's not really a point to me doing my own work at this time, because if I could ask a robot to just do it for them.
A story from our podcast, TBH. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. California is shutting down some of its schools. Some are closing because of drops in enrollment and major budget cuts. Just last month, SFUSD announced it'll merge and close some school campuses. One of the most contested Bay Area school closures happened 2 years ago when Oakland Unified announced it was permanently closing 7 schools by the end of 2022.
And we're going to come after you in the courts, as well as come after you for mistreating our parents and teachers.
It's wrap it up, Mr.
Tepscott. Yeah, I know
Tepscott.
You want me to wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
I want you to wrap it up.
One of the schools was Parker Elementary, and the aftermath made national headlines.
Parker Elementary School in East Oakland first opened in the 1920s, but had its final graduation last Wednesday, and some parents never went home.
Me and a group of mothers and a group of children and community members decided to not leave, to stay and occupy the school.
Despite the community-led occupation, school officials forced the parents and volunteers out of Parker Elementary. But today, the classrooms aren't sitting empty. KLW's Steffi Puerto has more on the school's new life.
Azalina Tambu remembers the day Parker Elementary closed like it was yesterday.
February 9th. Out of nowhere, they announced that the school is closed, and then May 25th, it's really gone. Our kids just walked the stage. We're never going to see these people again.
At the time, Azalina had 2 daughters at Parker, Nazira and Samira. And she had lived in East Oakland, just a couple blocks away from the school, for 15 years.
They loved it. That was their school. That was their home base, their security, their sanctuary, their happy place.
But when the district announced that they were shutting it down, along with 6 other schools, Azalina and the community were not happy. This was their school. They were worried about things like gentrification and privatization. She said students would have to rely on longer commutes just to get to school. Azalina's main concern was about safety.
If that school sat empty and that building sat empty, that the amount of violence on that corner of Richie and Ney would increase.
Up until this point, she had 0 experience being an organizer. She had never attended a school board meeting.
But when Parker closed, I knew I wanted to do something. I didn't know what I was going to do.
She decided to take matters into her own hands. Azalina refused to leave the school after her daughter's 5th grade graduation. She brought along teachers, parents, kids, and organizers. They called themselves Parker Liberation. And they camped out in the school, living and sleeping inside the classrooms for 125 days. They hosted daily classes in music, math, science, reading, and political science.
I knew that I was 10 toes down, all the way in. Nobody was going to take me out of the school.
There were months of intense school board meetings, clashes with security, and persistence to keep the school alive.
It's ridiculous that our parents are being treated this way, and you are responsible because you're the superintendent.
But ultimately, the school district won. The elementary school was shut down. But what about Azalina's fears? They didn't necessarily come true. I'm inside Oakland Adult Career Education Center, formerly known as Parker Elementary. The hallways look and sound the same, with bright artwork on the walls and classes in session. Like any other school, you can find students shuffling from class to class. The only difference? These aren't your typical elementary school students. The students here are over 18 and come from different walks of life.
Okay, let's vote. Raise your hand. Raise your hand if you want to play for points.
I peek into a former fourth grade classroom where there's a free ESL class taking place. Maria Suarez is playing an English comprehension game.
No, nunca tuve dudas. Yo siempre quise aprender inglés.
Maria is originally from Michoacán, Mexico. She moved to East Oakland 24 years ago, and she says learning English is something she's always wanted to accomplish ever since she got to this country. So when she saw her neighbors taking classes, she knew she had to do it.
Dijo mi hija, oh mami, ya entendí todo lo que dijiste. Y pues eso me dio gusto que...
She says her goal is to be fluent in English in the next 5 years. But for Maria, this is more than just fluency. It's an opportunity to be included in everyday life, from reading restaurant menus to making doctor's appointments.
Y aparte, pues, con los compañeros también me siento segura.
Maria says she feels safe in class and enjoys interacting with her classmates. They're all different ages and from different cultures. But the collective goal is to help one another learn English. The Oakland Adult Education Center offers more than just ESL classes. There's a variety of courses: GED, computer literacy, career employability, and life skills. I poke my head inside another classroom where a few students are taking a GED class. There, I speak to Sharon Fernandez. She's been working towards her high school diploma here for over 4 months.
I feel happy. Miss Linda is a very great teacher. And then she, like, motivated us to, like, continue doing our GED.
Sharon dropped out of high school in the 10th grade. She says she needed to work to help out her single mom. Now she's back, 12 years later, picking up where she left off.
I wanted to start because I want a better future for myself. And my parents brought me here, so I want them to be proud of myself and then a better future for my daughter.
For Sharon, her GED is the first step in one day becoming a nurse. She has two more tests to go before she completes her GED. But getting here wasn't easy.
We're asking adult students to not go to work, to leave their kids, to come and take part in a system that's already betrayed you. We have already let you down. And we're saying, come back so that we can help you now. Trust us again.
That's Kim Jones. He's the director of Oakland Career and Adult Education. Kim's passion for adult education comes from his personal experience. He dropped out of high school at the age of 18. And during his adolescence, he dealt with homelessness, incarceration, and drug use.
I used the adult ed system, the workforce development system. I went to community college, to university. So I went through these systems.
And he says the fact that Parker Elementary is the new home of the Adult Education Center is more important than you might think. Before this, there wasn't a dedicated adult education school in East Oakland. The closest option was all across town in West Oakland, over 12 miles away.
And it's where our Black and brown people has been concentrated, right? It's where the most poverty and the most economic disadvantage and the lowest education levels and all that stuff that happens when people are disenfranchised over generations.
Historically, East Oakland has struggled with a bad reputation in education, crime, and violence. The high school dropout rate in East Oakland is around 40%. And Kim says Parker's location means people who never imagined being able to go back to school or get job training now have access to resources in their own neighborhood. Here's Kim's colleague, Michelle Diero. She's the principal at the Adult Education Center.
So many students were like, oh, I just live right across the street. I live two blocks away. Oh, I'm so glad you're here. So the word is starting to get out that Parker Elementary is closed, unfortunately, but we are here in this location, we're thriving, and we're here to serve you.
But for parents like Azalina Tambu, who fought against the closure, the benefits don't always seem like enough.
There's nothing that outweighs the decision of closing down Parker. That was like a staple of our community. That was what we needed, was a K-8 school and a safe place that kids could go and also utilize the yard and play.
Azalina isn't the only one who's struggled with the closure of Parker. her daughters have had difficulty adjusting to their new schools.
And this is not unique to our family. Many of the children who went to Parker are having difficult times and are bouncing back and forth from school to school or are having major conflicts at the school that they're at now.
Still, Azalina has seen former Parker parents use the adult services here.
I'm seeing people from the community utilizing it. I just hope to see more, but I know that'll take time.
For now, Parker will continue to serve its greater community, even if the classrooms don't sound that different from its days as an elementary school. In Oakland, I'm Steffi Puerto for Cross Currents.
It's in your nose, the sound. It's little, it's short.
Steffi reported that as part of this year's Audio Academy. You can find more of her work at klw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. With schools breaking for summer vacation, that means we'll soon have a new class of teenagers in our studios, producing the next season of our series, By, About, and For Teenagers, TBH. So all this week, we're featuring stories made by the last class. Today, how ChatGPT impacts young people's lives. Here's the host of season 4, Miriam Reichenberg.
ChatGPT is an artificial intelligence chatbot that generates text, and it's something I've been thinking about lately. The technology can produce just about anything when given prompts. It can come up with an original recipe, create a poem for your special someone, and write an essay for your English class that you may have put off until the last minute.
ChatGPT. Maybe you've heard of it. If you haven't, then get ready.
Because ChatGPT.
But despite all of the hype, there are some very real concerns.
Since making its debut, there's been a never-ending stream of reports, opinions, and thoughts on the new technology, especially in relation to how it should or shouldn't be used in the classroom.
A new class of AI has been unleashed.
Nobody had any idea that like 100 million people would start using these things.
But very little of this reporting addresses the perspectives of teens. As ChatGPT becomes more pervasive, my peers and I will be affected in ways we can't even begin to imagine.
And it really does feel like every day we're stepping closer to, like, you know, the Matrix or any of those technological dystopias.
Zoe Graham, who happens to be my cousin, graduated this year from Skyline High School in Oakland. She was just a little freaked out when she first used the AI chatbot.
It felt weird to be reading something that sounded like it had a personality and it was like its own character, but it wasn't a person. It was generated, you know, it's just a language model. Like, it's just copying what it's read online, basically.
And so I started to wonder about how young people are using this new technology and how educators are approaching it. Is ChatGPT a useful tool in the classroom, something to play around with, or should we stay away from it? These questions will become crucial as we enter our last couple years of high school, apply to college, and join the workforce. I started hearing mumblings and rumors about students who were playing around with ChatGPT for their schoolwork. Then one class period, my economics teacher spent the whole 58 minutes explaining how the use of ChatGPT was not acceptable, how he would check for AI use, how there would be major consequences.
You can't just say, ChatGPT, write me an essay. If you're going to do that, it's not saying I've done that before, but if you're going to do that, you need to edit it a lot.
That's my friend Connor Levi Lang, the most avid ChatGPT user I know.
You can't just turn in the finished product because it's going to have a lot of inconsistencies and flaws.
Connor also goes to Berkeley High and says his computer science teacher actually had him use ChatGPT for a project, but he mainly uses it for fun. I asked him to open up the ChatGPT app. It was a little overwhelming. You'll see what I mean. He's asked it,
what would happen if you inhaled hydrogen gas and then blew it out and you had a lighter in front of your face and if you could breathe fire or not?
About Michael Jackson's nose jobs, about Skier yogurt, about how he could improve his SAT score.
And then I tried to, what did I do? Oh, a post-2021 world summary to see if ChatGPT knew anything about post-2021. This is all within the previous 7 days.
In just 7 days. I'd been made to think that using ChatGPT for schoolwork, or even just to mess around with, was a form of plagiarism, or something illicit, something we haven't quite named.
Have I used it to help an assignment? Yes. Have I used it to fully write my essay? No.
He explained, in typical Connor fashion, that using ChatGPT in the classroom isn't cheating. It's just more of a creative workaround.
You'll use it how you're going to use it, and maybe you get caught cheating on your assignment, right? And maybe you don't. You know, it's just, like, it's there, and you can use it or you can not use it.
ChatGPT was first introduced to the public in November 2022. GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer. Basically, that means that ChatGPT produces text using the information it's been trained with online. None of this is new, except that this tool transforms what it's learned into a personalized response. It's built like the brain, a bunch of neural networks processing data quickly, predicting the next most likely word in response to a prompt. I first found it mind-blowing when I learned that that is all ChatGPT is capable of doing, predicting the next word. Sure, it's fascinating, but it's also a little bit scary. ChatGPT is artificial intelligence. It's definitely not human.
You can't limit ChatGPT. It's out there.
But Helen Crompton, a professor of technology at Old Dominion University in Virginia, says schools are trying. School districts in Seattle, New York, and Los Angeles have policies banning ChatGPT.
It's like water. It can't be collected back and kind of put into a little bowl. It's splashed everywhere.
Crompton specializes in studying the intersection between AI and education, and is also frequently consulted by organizations concerned about AI use, such as the United Nations.
With the media, they've put a very negative spin often on ChatGPT, and that's a shame because students feel embarrassed to use it, and they shouldn't. They just need to make sure, like any tool, that they're using it for the right things, not the wrong things.
She hit the nail on the head. I was ashamed to even think about using ChatGPT for schoolwork. But Crompton argues that AI can be a good thing if we harness it correctly. She says we shouldn't shy away from using it in the classroom.
We've always been worried about things, like I said, about the newspapers, the internet. Gosh, when the internet was out, you know, students, we could forget about school. Schools were gonna die.
Almost everyone with access to the internet, from students and teachers to dog walkers and chefs, can use this tool. ChatGPT, then, can be an equalizer if we use it with intention.
It's just made schools better where students can get information, people all over the world. In fact, all of these things are actually, it's called democratizing education, democratizing knowledge, in that you don't have to be rich, you don't have to be powerful, you don't have to have amazing computer science skills to be able to get information. We're all kind of, it's leveling the playing field in many ways.
I called up an English teacher at Berkeley High who's adapting some of her lesson plans with ChatGPT in mind. She uses it to generate sample questions and cater material to students' interests, a very different approach than the one my economics teacher took. When I started doing research for this piece, my friend Rebecca Birnbaum and I decided it was time to finally play around with ChatGPT. I downloaded the app on my phone. We were late to the game. The app was downloaded over 500,000 times in just the first 6 days of its release. We'd both been hesitant to use it, maybe because we didn't fully understand how this new technology worked or the ways we could best use it. It felt overwhelming.
You can be rude to it also. It's a robot.
That's true.
Rebecca is a visual artist, so she typed in this.
Question is, how do you feel about AI platforms stealing artists' work to to create generated art.
Go ahead, type that in. And then ChatGPT had a response.
It's pretty long. The ChatGPT bot says, as an AI, I don't possess personal feelings or emotions, but the use of AI platforms to generate digital art raises ethical questions regarding intellectual property and artistic integrity.
And Rebecca has told me she feels like she should stay away from ChatGPT because it might take away from her creativity.
It makes me feel a little bit like there's not really a point to me doing my own work at this time, because if I could or somebody else could ask a robot to just do it for them, then it's like my own work isn't valued, or I know that I could get a better grade using AI, so what's really the point of me putting in my own effort?
It's funny though. I'm actually noticing that many of my friends have taken on more old school analog activities. Maybe ChatGPT and all the other digital technologies we're bombarded with daily are bringing out a creativity resurgence, even a mild rebellion. I mean, records are back and film cameras are cool again. Even the orienteering club at my high school, where kids navigate various courses and terrains, uses paper maps and compasses. And look, there will always be those who avoid these new technologies. For example, there's the Luddite Club, a group of teens in New York who've taken it so far as to limit and even avoid the use of smartphones, social media, and the internet in general. But is avoidance really the answer?
This is our future. AI is not going away.
My cousin, Zoe Graham again.
And I think the people who are going to be most successful, at least in my generation as we head off, you know, into the workforce, are the people who can use AI to their advantage and, you know, understand it the best.
Zoe's not wrong. Maybe the key is that, as young people, we should learn how best to use the tools to suit our individual needs. AI bots like ChatGPT are a wholly different type of technology because they give a false sense that we're actually communicating with something sentient. At first, with all of the warnings from teachers and alarmist news stories, ChatGPT seemed like this big threat to our educational systems and creativity. But now I'm thinking that we just need to understand the implications of using it. And as a high school student, it will probably prove useful every now and again. So I think I will use ChatGPT in the future, and that doesn't mean I'll lose any of my natural curiosity or creativity. One morning, Zoe and I were talking, sitting with my computer between us on my bedroom floor. We had just gotten back from a walk. Zoe pulled up ChatGPT and asked it a question.
What is the future of AI? Oh, it's thinking. Oh, it's writing a lot. Okay. The future of AI holds tremendous potential and is likely to have a significant impact on various aspects of our lives.
Whatever the future of AI, I'm feeling less uneasy with ChatGPT now that I understand that it isn't going to take over our classrooms and our minds or limit our creativity.
That was the first episode of season 4 of TBH, a podcast made by, about, and for teenagers. Holly J. McDeed and Sarah Lai Sterling were the editors and teachers for that season. Anisha Herjani was the supervising editor. Lauren Tran Makowski was production assistant, and Tariq Foda assisted with engineering. We'll be airing more stories from the series all this week, and you can find them all online at KELW.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Tune in tomorrow morning at 11. We'll hear about a teenager's anxiety caused by the climate crisis.
You feel helpless, just becomes a number, and you don't really like want to do anything about it because that number's so big and it's really hard to like bring it down just by yourself.
Another episode from our podcast TBH tomorrow morning at 11. And here's some local music before we leave you. This is San Francisco musician Ella Harp. She'll be performing tomorrow night at Bottom of the Hill in the city.
Cold open sky, fighting the clouds in the desert, wide open eyes, willing for rain, but they both stay.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Sandra Halliday, Alistair Boone, James Rowlands, Gunnady Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Caves, but we both stand still.